Everhart, it's good to have you here. It's better to have this red coat. I mean, how can you not follow a leader? Now, come on.
At least they can see me, right?
Can you, like, buy one of those for each of our song leaders? That is good looking. I like that. All right. Glad to have our other visitors, too. Well, those of you who've been around know that I've been talking to you about great heroes from the Old Testament. We talked about Elijah. We talked about Jacob or Israel. And today we're going to talk about Samuel. Samuel means a godly name. There is strong indication that he was considered, at least in Christ's time, of kind of the head of the prophets. Maybe we might call him the greatest Israelite since Moses. He's the only person in the Bible who has been a judge. You remember the judges, although he doesn't come from the book of Judges. A judge, a ruler over Israel before the kings, a priest, and a prophet. Okay, he's also the kingmaker in that he anointed the first two kings of Israel, and as you'll see, his failings may have been instrumental, probably were, in establishing the monarchy. He's one of the great men of the Old Testament. Now, let me talk about Old Testament stories, okay? We neglect the Old Testament to our own peril. But sometimes we look to the Old Testament for guidance, and that's good. But we look to it for guidance like, what does this verse tell me, or what does that verse tell me? And for instance, from the book of Samuel, from the story of Samuel, you could get a lot of guidance. You know, the famous statement that Samuel says to Saul, to obey is better than to sacrifice. That tells us that the relationship between obedience and religion. But I would like to submit to you today that we miss something when we don't just study the stories. Okay? We don't just study what went on in these people's lives and how they dealt with it. Because we don't want a religion that doesn't speak to our stories and our lives. And although it's over 2,000, 3,000 years ago, I guess Samuel's about 3,000 years ago, and they had a different background, they had a different language, they had a different social structure. So much was different. The humanity of the stories reaches to us. And there are so many great stories about Samuel. You'll remember Samuel's sons failed him. It's kind of interesting because Samuel had taken the place of Eli, whose sons also failed him. And this failure of Samuel's sons, he didn't keep his own house in order, was one of the reasons that the Israelites came to him and said, "We want a king. When you're dead, Samuel, we're not going to put up with your sons. They're crummy." Okay, anybody out there have crummy sons or daughters? We don't want to say that. Sadie, keep your hand down out there. But he did. But he was such an important man that the failures that he had in raising his family, and I think we can be sympathetic to Samuel in that he was real busy doing the Lord's work. Okay, other great men of the Old Testament had the same problem. David had the same problem, for instance. But we can realize that he was such an important man that his failures affected everybody. So there's something to learn from a story like that, isn't there? The Lord spoke through Samuel often. And it's interesting that he spoke through Samuel often, and before Samuel and after Samuel, he didn't speak through people nearly as much. A great man, the pinnacle. We know the story of him anointing David. We know the story of the rejection of Saul. We know the story of Samuel's birth. You remember the story. It's a particularly important one to me. We named Hannah because of that story. Okay, Elkanah had two wives. One of them was Hannah, and she was barren. And Elkanah evidently was of the priestly tribe, and every year they would go up to Shiloh, where the Ark of the Covenant was, evidently still in the tabernacle, in the tent, and they would offer sacrifices, and Hannah would go up to pray for a child. It was a big thing. And do you remember that beautiful story where she's praying, and it's such an intense prayer that she's speaking, but the words aren't coming out. And Eli, who is the high priest at the time, the leader of Israel, okay, looks at her and thinks she's drunk. And he tells her, get out of here, you drunk woman. You know, we don't need you. This is not the place for you to be. You know, go someplace else. She says, I'm not drunk. You know, I'm praying so hard here. And Eli says, go on home. May the Lord grant your request, which was to have a child. And she did. And she made the promise in front of Eli, to God, and to herself, that if the Lord would give her a son, that she would dedicate him to the Lord. And an odd thing to us, isn't it? But evidently after he was weaned, I kind of get the idea that it was, you know, 3 or 4 years old, 5 years old, when he was able to live without his mother, she took him and gave him to Eli, and he became his helper there in the temple. And she said he would never cut his hair, so he was under a vow, and he remained and spent his life in the temple and doing the Lord's work, helping Eli. And that's just a wonderful story, isn't it? And the Lord blessed her, and she had other children after this. And Samuel bore the burden of being, I think where it's fair to say, the sole emissary between God and Israel at a time when Israel was having all kinds of problems. Okay. All kinds of trouble. It was up to Samuel to take care of them. Particularly trouble with Saul. Saul was a good warrior, but not a good king. He was a man of action, but not a man of spirit. He was headstrong. Sound familiar to any of us? He had many of the failings that we had, and Samuel had to deal with it. But the lesson today, I want to kind of center at an earlier time in Samuel's life. I just wanted you to kind of get an idea of who the man was and what he had to do. You know, when the Israel, he spoke through Samuel for 40 years. Okay. You know. And when Samuel came, people listened. And Saul killed a bunch of priests, but he didn't kill Samuel. Okay. He seemed to have been afraid of him. And for good reason. Back to the early years. Samuel ministered before the Lord with Eli. Okay, so this is the time after his mother had taken him and given him to the Lord there at Shiloh at the tabernacle. Some people think they may have built other buildings kind of go along with the tabernacle. Tabernacle was a tent. Okay, and the Ark of the Covenant remained in the tabernacle until Solomon built the temple some 80 years later, approximately. And Samuel's a boy, and it doesn't tell us how old he is. I kind of think 10, maybe 12, but I'm just kind of guessing. He certainly was not a man, okay? He seemed to have been in that age where children are, where they hear things in the night, okay? But anyway, let's play the story. Previous to this, Eli is the high priest. He was the high priest for 40 years. Okay. If Israel has anything of leadership for the whole nation, okay, remember it's the high priest. You remember their identity was in tribes. Their tribes were always fighting each other. And many of the judgments seen in the book of Judges would just be on one or two tribes, wouldn't be on all the tribes. So that they were not a unified people, and Eli for 40 years was their unity. But he, like Samuel after him, didn't keep his sons in control. And what made it worse was Eli evidently was of the line of Aaron. You'll remember when the Lord established the priesthood, okay, there were many, but only the line of Aaron. By the way, this is going to stop with that, with out of the line of Aaron. Okay, but it's going to take over the priesthood of Eli and his son's phalanx. So his sons would be kind of high priest and deputy high priest in waiting. Eli would be the chairman of the board, and one of the sons would be the CEO, and one would be the CFO. Am I getting this business thing right? Is that what we do these days? Okay, dean and assistant dean, for those of you who are in, we don't have any college folks here, teachers. Principal and assistant principal, and Eli. I hit something that you understand yet. But they were bad, and they would sit here, and people would bring their sacrifice. Now, you got to remember what a sacrifice was. They brought something like a calf, which was very valuable to them, and they didn't burn it up. Okay, they cooked it. Parts of it were burned up. Okay, and they were able to get, part of it went to the Lord, and part of it went to them. Okay, and Eli's sons would steal it. They would just take it. They would take the best part. They would not allow them to cut off the parts which were given to the Lord. This is a little unusual to us because we don't do this anymore. But this was a big thing. Just imagine. By the way, for those of you who know, normally we take the money and put it there so kids won't come up and take some of it after. If I just, you know, did that. Kind of like some preachers today, I guess, but that's what they were doing. Okay, they were stealing from both the people and the Lord, and evidently they were having sex with the women that helped it. So they were bad people, and the Lord pronounced a doom upon them. He said, "I'm through with the house of Eli. I'm through with the house of Aaron." And that's a big thing for those of you who've gone back to Exodus. I'm through with the house of Eli because of this, and I'm going to prove it. Hophni and Phinehas will die together. And they do later on in the story. So this has been pronounced, and evidently Eli knows about it. But he's, for some reason, he's not able to get his sons under control. Okay, not willing to stand up and say, "You guys get out of here." Don't know the dynamic there. This is the story. Samuel's young. Let's just kind of imagine him as 10 years old. And the story begins in 1 Samuel chapter 3. The boy Samuel ministered before the Lord under Eli. And in those days, the word of the Lord was rare. There were not many visions. And one night Eli, whose eyes were becoming so weak that he could barely see, was lying down in his usual place. And the lamp of God had not yet gone out, so we can kind of get that this is early evening. And Samuel was lying in the tabernacle of the Lord, where the ark of God was, and then the Lord called to Samuel. Now, it doesn't tell us what the Lord said. So I guess what he said something was, "Samuel, Samuel." Okay. But Samuel hears this, and he thinks it's Eli in the next room. And you can imagine that. I mean, we all hear things in the night, don't we? Those of you who are young, if you don't wake up in the middle of the night, your only choice is to die young, because you will when you get older. Okay, wake up in the middle of the night. And he hears him, and he thinks it's Eli. It's the only other person in the building here. And he goes into Eli, and he says, you know, and Eli says, "I didn't call you, okay? I didn't call you." He ran to Eli and says, "Here I am, you called me." But Eli said, "I did not call. Go back and lie down." So he went and lied down. And again the Lord called Samuel. And Samuel got up and went to Eli and said, "Here I am, you called me." Now, I need to make a break here. We don't want to miss one thing that I think sometimes is we underestimate the importance of. The Lord knew Samuel's name. Okay, now that doesn't, when we, our vision of God, that doesn't seem like a big thing, but it is a big thing. The Lord knowing your name is a big thing, in that it's not just Him knowing the name, you know, like we know that we maybe know. Well, have you ever traveled with Glenn? You can't go anywhere without Glenn without him knowing somebody, okay? I know another guy in Greenville, and he knows the other half of people in Greenville that Glenn doesn't know, okay? Yeah, come on, am I right? He's always fine. People know, that's not that knowing that kind of name. That's not what we're talking about, is it? We've probably all met people and we're going, I know his name, I know it. Joe, yeah, I got his name. Not what it's talking about. It's talking about an intimate relationship. It's talking about recognizing who this person is, God doing it, and it is one of the major benefits of Christianity. He knows us by name. He has a book, and our names are written in that book. Okay, so I don't want you to pass that up. He knows Samuel's name. Okay. And again, the Lord said, Samuel, and Samuel got up and went to Eli and said, Here I am, you called me. My son Eli said, I did not call you, go back and lie down. Now Samuel did not know yet the Lord. The word of the Lord had not yet been revealed to him. So we have a situation where young Samuel, it's not surprising, isn't it? He doesn't know about the Lord, he just knows about the temple and about Eli, or the tabernacle and Eli and the ark and the things that they're doing Hebrew worship. He just knows about this thing, but he doesn't know the Lord, and certainly the Lord has never spoken to him in the way that he will speak to Samuel. He's speaking to Samuel that night, and he will speak to Samuel the rest of his life. Okay, so it hadn't happened. And this happens three times. Now, what parent hasn't had their young child, when they get old enough to get out of bed and kind of go through the house, they just show up at night in your bedroom, don't they? They just, here they are. Sometimes they want to sleep with you. Sometimes they're scared. Sometimes they want a drink of water. And you just wake up and you're just so tired and you just want to say, you stupid kid, won't you let me sleep? But of course you can't do it. Yeah, well, you can't do that. You know, you got to go get them a drink of water or put them back to bed. Well, about the third time that happens in one night, you're pretty testy. Okay, come on, let's admit it. We're pretty testy. Okay. Well, Eli stopped being testy because he realized something's going on. Okay. I don't know if it had to do with that prophecy, with what the Lord had said about him and his sons. I don't know. But the light begins to go off. Okay. How many times in our lives has the light begin to go off spiritually? Have we begun to understand something that we've just missed so far? That repetition has begun to get through to us, and we're not sure exactly what's happening, but we know something is happening. Some people kind of get a tingle on the back of their neck. I don't know if women do that with their longer hair. Men, you get a tingle on the back of your head. Sometimes your hands begin to shake when you realize, this is something big. Okay. But anyway, so Eli remembers it. And this is what Eli says. Now, we've been pretty tough on old Eli. Okay. But he's been a good man. I mean, he's had a failure, but he's been a good man. Okay. And then Eli realized that the Lord was calling the boy. Have you ever been at work and somebody came into the business after you got promoted ahead of you? Ever happened? Have you ever been on a basketball team and you've been first string and you come in and the freshman is now first string? Have you know the kind of things that we're talking about? That's what's happening to Eli. The Lord hadn't been talking to Eli. You remember that part that it said the Lord didn't speak much at this time? The word of the Lord hadn't come? All Eli evidently has gotten is this one prophecy of, you've messed it up so bad, I'm done with you. Okay, I'm done with your house. I'm going to take it away from you. And here Eli in the middle of the night, after this young boy, 10 years old, we're going to call him, has bugged him twice, begins to realize, uh-oh. He's better than I am. The Lord has more favor on him than he does me. Now, it's okay not to be as great a person as Samuel, okay, because he's one of the greats. You know, in the list, in Hebrews chapter 11 of the great men of faith, he makes that list. You and I don't, okay? But so it's okay. It's not that bad a thing because Samuel is one of the great men of the Old Testament, but you can imagine. Here this boy has been with you for 4 or 5 years. You know, you're having him sweep out the tabernacle and carry out the ashes and get rid of the bones and all the stuff. And he's got to do whatever you say. And every time he gets scared at night, he comes to you. And all of a sudden you realize, the Lord's talking to him. And he's not talking to me. Or I guess it would be more accurate to say, he's talking to me through this boy. You can imagine the emotions which would go on. And Eli realized that it was the Lord calling the boy. And Eli told Samuel, go and lie down. And if he calls to you, say, speak, Lord. Now that word Lord is Yahweh or Jehovah. That's the given, well, given's not the right word, the name of the Lord. It's not God, it's Yahweh. Go speak, Yahweh, for your servant is listening. So Samuel went down in his place. And we wonder if Eli went back to sleep. Maybe you've known you were going to get fired. Maybe you know that you had a test tomorrow in school and you weren't ready. Maybe you know that the air in that tire has been going down. And it's just, when I get up in the morning, there's not a good amount. If I hitting something here, did I finally get somebody? It's just, I'm gonna have a flat. Maybe the battery just barely started that truck and the cold front is hit and you know what is waiting for you. Okay. Maybe you're like those men in World War II that took off in the torpedo bombers at the Battle of Midway, knowing that they weren't coming back. Eli, we wonder if he went back to sleep. But Samuel went and lay down in his place. Doesn't say he slept. This is a big thing. You can imagine how exciting they are. And the Lord came and stood there and called as at other times, and Samuel, Samuel. And Samuel said, speak, for your servant is listening. Eli told him to tell that. My guess is Eli knew what was coming. Eli was willing to accept it. In fact, the rest of the story indicates that very strongly. But what a great attitude he had instilled in this young boy, in that he, one, wasn't so afraid, and two, had the attitude of, speak, I'm listening. Whatever you say will be just fine. I'm here for you, Lord. I'm your servant. Tell me what to do. Now, does a 10-year-old boy understand all the implications of that attitude? No. Neither does a 30-year-old man or a 60-year-old woman. But they have the attitude. What do you say? Whatever you say, Lord, I'm here. I'm waiting. I'm listening. And I think we know the rest of the story. And the Lord said to Samuel, see, I'm about to do something in Israel that will make the ears of everyone who hears it tingle. Now at that time I will carry out against Eli everything I spoke against his family from beginning to end, for I told him that I would judge his family forever because of the sin he knew about. That's the sin of his sons. And his sons made themselves contemptible, and he failed to restrain them. And therefore I swore to the house of Eli, the guilt of Eli's house will never be atoned for by sacrifice or offering. In other words, Aaron's sons, their sons, this high priesthood has been passed down through lineage for generations, and it's over. Okay? And Eli, if you have any regard for your fathers and your forefathers, you need to be ashamed of what you've done. I'm not going to put up with this anymore. Think what a hard burden this was for a 10-year-old or whatever boy. That's pretty tough stuff, isn't it? I mean, maybe he knew, I'm sure he knew Hophni and Phinehas. Maybe he knew what they were doing was wrong, probably did. I'm certain that at that age he didn't understand the full import of it. But yet here he is all mixed up. And he's got to go tell this to the most important person in his life. Now, his father was important. They came up ever so often. I think it was once a year and visited him. But day in and day out, he's been with Eli. And Eli's the one that's taught him. And Eli's the one that's guided him. And Eli is the one that said, go back to sleep, and if you hear this again, it's the Lord talking to you. And poor Samuel has got to be the bearer of bad news. Now, we kind of like bad news when we don't like the other people. Okay. Now, come on, admit it. I mean, Sharon, you and I love it when the Boston Celtics get beat, right? Oh, I'm sorry, I had you on the other side of that. No. Okay. We, you know, when the Lord takes down Notre Dame, I am happy. Okay, I just got to admit it. Okay, I've just got to admit it. Joe Theismann is not my favorite person. And if you don't know who Joe Theismann is, you're not old enough to understand football. Okay. Yeah. When we, you know, and you probably got somebody at work that when they get, you know, get in trouble, you're probably going, yeah, he's had it coming a long time. But that's not what's going on here, is it? It's not his enemy. It's not his malefactor. It's not his person that's done him wrong or not treated him as well as he could. It's the main person in his life. I guess we would call it in the term parlance of psychology, his significant other. Okay? It's all Samuel's got, except his mother and dad every once in a while. And he's got to go tell him the word of the Lord. I think we can understand a little bit of the burden that would be on this little boy. Okay? I think we can understand how tough this would be to do. Have you seen the movie The Devil Wears Prada? With Meryl Streep and Anne Hathaway. You've seen it? I just watched it for a little while the other night. Not one of my favorites, but come on. And Meryl Streep is this harpy of a magazine, fashion magazine editor, and Anne Hathaway is this new hire, this aide, but she's not only the aide, she works for the chief aide, okay, and they both kind of sit out in front of Meryl Streep's office and get all the wrath and are kind of snooty, okay, and I forgot the name of the chief aide, so I'll just call her chief. They're fixing to go to Paris. And this is the best thing for fashion people, is to go to Paris because they get all these expensive clothes, and she's looking forward to her trip in Paris and everything. And Meryl Streep comes in to Anne Hathaway, who works for this woman, and says, you know, you're doing a real good job, and I really like that. I'm taking you to Paris, and I'm not taking her, and you tell her. Okay, and we can kind of understand and ask, I don't want to tell her, you know. I want to go to Paris. You know, this is good, but I don't want to tell her. And we see something of what's going on with Samuel, don't we? Okay. Now, I am not equating Meryl Streep and God. Nor am I equating Anne Hathaway and Samuel. But I hope you get the point that I am trying to say is sometimes being the bearer of bad news isn't any fun at all. Okay. And Samuel is the one picked. He's the one who has to do it. And then we go on with the story. And so Samuel lay down till morning. Doesn't say he slept. And then I opened the doors of the house of the Lord, and he was afraid to tell Eli the vision. But Eli called to him and said, Samuel, my son. My guess is none of them had slept. And Samuel answered, here I am. And what did he say to you, Eli asked. Do not hide it from me. And we see something of the character of Eli here. Don't hide it from me. Okay. I deserve it. It's inevitable. It's more powerful than me. There's no use trying to hide from it. I'm not going to be like Jonah and try to run from the Lord. Okay. And may the God deal with you, be it ever so severely, if you hide from me anything that he has told you. God talked to Samuel and he didn't talk to Eli. So Samuel told him everything and hid nothing from him. And then Eli said, "He is the Lord," or "He is Yahweh. Let him do what is good in his eyes." And then the Lord was with Samuel as he grew up, and he let none of his words fall to the ground. In other words, that means that he followed the word of the Lord. And all Israel from Dan to Beersheba recognized that Samuel was attested as a prophet of the Lord. And the Lord continued to appear at Shiloh, and there he revealed himself to Samuel through his word. And Samuel's word came to all Israel. And we have this kind of interesting story about a young boy and a man of God who has failed, who hasn't been as good as he should have been. And we find that really it's a human interest story if we read it like that. This is kind of what I was trying to get to you when we read the Old Testament. It's real people. It's real stuff. There's reality in the story and what happens and how the people treat it. But the story itself is full of pathos. It's full of sadness, but it's also full of promise. Okay? And here's three things that I'd like for you to think of from this story. First, we're never too young or too old to hear God's call. Okay. God is always surprising in the people he picks. Throughout history, particularly biblical history, people have thought that the Lord would pick somebody else than he really picked. The greatest example is our Lord Jesus. Not what anybody expected. But it tells us that whether we're young or old, we need to be listening. It's okay to sleep all the way through the night, but you still need to have your ear pricked. You need to be listening for the Lord. I don't think any of us are going to receive the call that Samuel called. We're not going to be the universal prophet for our city, or our state, or our county, or whatever. But there are all kinds of messages which the Lord gives to us, and we need to be open to them. No, I'm too old. No, I'm too young. At the same time, you people who are a little bit old, I'm going to exclude myself from that for obvious reasons. You need to listen to young people. Don't be afraid. Sometimes they're not as stupid as you were when you were a young person, okay? Sometimes they have some things to add to the conversation. They deserve to at least be heard. You young people, it goes both ways. Okay, that was for you, Tom. Okay. The second thing is we may not. In fact, I'm going to change that. I wrote, we may not understand God's plans at first. I'm going to change that to we probably won't understand God's plans at first. You know, Samuel thought this was Eli. Samuel thought, you know, just a mundane happening. Samuel had no idea what the Lord was doing with him. That's the same way with us all the time, isn't it? How many things in our lives can we look back on and say, you know, I just didn't understand what was going on at the time. It was like the guy said, you know, if I'd have just bought land in North Dallas in the 1950s, I would be a millionaire today. Of course, I didn't have any money to buy land in North Dallas in the 1950s or 60s or 70s. We just need to realize that we may not understand what's going on, but we need to have the same attitude as Samuel. Here am I, Lord, tell me. Okay. Here am I, Lord, tell me. And the last one is a tough one. Okay. Because this is a tough story. This is not a nice story. This is not everybody treating each other, you know, with roses and hearts and Valentine's. Allegiance to God is more important than allegiance to our friends, our families, our co-workers, the people we like, our country, anything, the allegiance to the Lord is more important. Okay. Samuel had to be the best that told Eli he wasn't going to Paris. No, okay. All right. And it was tough. He didn't want to do it. Hey. He had too much respect for him. But we need to realize that the word of the Lord, you know, when we say it's sharper than a two-edged sword, that means it's cutting. Okay. And we need to have our allegiance not to people first, but to the Lord first.